We're examining the well-being of children who have an incarcerated parent here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. UW-Milwaukee researchers found scant studies on how many children have a mother in jail and where these children live during their mother's time in jail and the effects. Yet the Sentencing Project data says millions of children can identify with having a parent behind bars sometime during their life. Join in, 800-642-1234. Susan Rose is Professor Emeritus at the Helen Bader School of Social Welfare at UW-Milwaukee, where her research looks at intervention with incarcerated women and the needs of mothers and pregnant women in jail as they transition back into the community. Susan, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
Your study looked into these 145 incarcerated mothers with children in a large jail in the Midwest to try to suss out how mothers perceive their children's care. Where do children go when their mothers are in jail?
Well, first of all, let me acknowledge that this study was done with Dr. Tom LaBelle as well, who is in the Department of Criminology. So we worked together on this study. Where do mothers go while they're in jail is difficult because a lot of the literature really puts together jail and prison. So we have a lot more information about where children of mothers who are incarcerated in prison go. What we don't have is good information about where mothers who are incarcerated in jail go. And that's primarily because when they're in jail for shorter periods of time. The mid-range of that is about 25 days, but it can be a couple days up to a year and a half. So we don't always get that information. And mothers aren't always necessarily willing to say where their kids are for fear of child welfare intervention. They're worried that their kids are going to go into formal foster care and they're not going to have any control over where those kids go. That's one of the reasons why we don't really know as much. So that was the impetus for this study, which to try to look at that, where those kids are going.
A couple days in jail to a year and a half in jail, either way you go, that has an impact on the children involved here, on the families involved. What have you found?
An incredible impact. So we do have some idea that, first of all, about three quarters of the women who are in jails are mothers, and about 65-70% of those in general are mothers of minor children. So when you think about you're 7 or 8 years old and you come home and mom's not there, she's been picked up and arrested and she's in jail, that has an incredible impact. Usually it's families who step in to do that. So we have an idea, and from our study, really we learned that the majority of these kids, young kids, generally stay with maternal grandparents. Maternal grandmothers is the most common. It's about 50%, about another 20%, 18 to 20% will stay with paternal relatives. That's paternal grandparents or their own fathers. Another 20% or so will stay with maternal relatives, aunts, sisters, brothers and sisters. Older brothers and sisters might take care of them. And really only about, when we're talking about jail, only about 10% of those children will actually go into formal foster care. There's another 2 to 3% that mothers don't really know where they are. They're not sure. They could be with a friend. If they're teenagers, they could be off on their own. Don't really know at this point. But you are correct. The impact is profound because kids have to change schools. They've got to change, people who might have been supportive to them, a coach, a teacher. They don't have access to them. Another common thing that is really an impact is that kids are commonly separated. Mm. So if a mom's got two or three kids, maybe four or five, not all of those are going to go stay with the same relative. They're going to be split apart. And if they go into foster care, very unlikely that they would go into the same foster home. So the impact on kids is pretty huge. That doesn't even touch the fears that they have about what's going to happen to their mother.
Or the fear that their other caregiver will be taken away in the same way.
You know, it's so funny. We use the fear of police in some ways, and some people think this is an okay thing to do to help discipline children. But so when a mom gets incarcerated, you know, the fear is the police are going to come and get you. Well, their worst fear has occurred. The police have come and taken mom away. So it's frightening to kids, especially younger kids. It's frightening to kids at all ages, let me say that. But I think younger kids have an even harder time with that.
Susan Rose, you said that mothers may avoid talking about their children while in jail out of a fear that something then will happen to their children. Their children will be taken away. Is that a warranted fear? Is that a fair concern?
Oh, that's a really good question. I think it may be for some mothers. I think that's true. It depends. You know, there's been a lot of, there's an effort to support treatment instead of prison for mothers who have substance use disorders. But there's also some real concern about that, that if a mom has been using substances and she's had contact with the child welfare authorities before, that if she gets, if she relapses, ends up in jail, that it may be that those kids are going to go into some form of placement. Now, oftentimes the placement will be with a family member. That's the child welfare authorities really try to do that first. But many of these families, these are, you know, they're stuck in poverty themselves. And they may have some, if you're talking about placing kids with older grandparents, they may have health problems. So to take on the responsibility of three or four kids, that's not that easy to do. So those kids might end up in foster care. So I guess I would say it's not unrealistic, but it's certainly the concern that they have.
There are so many emotions, the grief, the anger, the shame, the sadness. Do mothers have any support systems in jail to process that hardship of being separated from your child?
Well, those are excellent questions. And a lot of people don't realize the amount of grief and shame. And I'm glad you brought that up, that women who have children and are incarcerated experience, they know clearly what the world thinks of them. When we spoke with mothers, there's no doubt that people think they are the lowest of the low. How could you do that? We've talked with mothers who were out on the streets selling their bodies with holding a baby in arms because of their addictions. So they know that society does not have a lot of sympathy for them for that. And they don't have much sympathy for themselves in many ways. So what kind of supports do they get? It depends on the jail, I will tell you that. Milwaukee County 10, 12 years ago was a very different picture. They had almost no support in jail, absolutely none to really try to deal with some of that. That the good news is at the House of Correction in Milwaukee, that is changing. In the past 10 or 12 years, there have been significant efforts to bring in mental health folks, to bring in programs that really help moms deal with their substance use, with their grief, with the loss that they're facing. So things are changing in that world.
Susan Rose with us, Professor Emeritus at the Helen Bader School of Social Welfare at UW-Milwaukee, Special Topics Editor for the Journal of Social Work Practice in the Addictions. Join in on parenting through incarceration, your experience, your thoughts, your solutions, 800-642-1234. You're listening to The Morning Show. Stay with us back in a minute with Susan Rose here on the Ideas Network. We're talking about the effects of incarceration on families here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kemp. Camp Reunite is a week-long trauma-informed summer camp for youth who have a parent incarcerated in Wisconsin. Allie participated in the 2018 program, seeing her kids five times in 3 years, in conversation with her daughter on what that feels like.
She's dealt with kids bullying because I'm here. So sometimes, do you not like to tell people I'm here sometimes?
I don't like telling people that you're here.
But now she's it's nice that she can be in a place where everybody's in the same situation.
Audio courtesy of WBAY-TV. Join in 800-642-1234. Susan Rose, Professor Emeritus at the Helen Bader School of Social Welfare at UW-Milwaukee, with us for about 9 more minutes. Susan, Camp Reunite started yesterday in partnership with Chachita Correctional Institution for Women in Fond du Lac County. How important are in-person visits between children and their mothers?
This is critical. I have to tell you that it's so exciting to see that program really resume. Especially these are women who are more not in local jails, but this is critical. In fact, that's one of the best things to do for both the mom who is incarcerated and for kids is to have contact and full contact visits. It's the thing that keeps them connected with the kids. One of the things when you talk with moms who are incarcerated, that their motivation for desistance from crime, for getting clean and sober again, is their kids. They want to reunite with their kids. There's nothing that's more moving than to talk to a mom about that. But the opportunities for visitation, I will tell you, in jail are extremely limited. Even before the pandemic, most jails in the United States have gone to video visiting.
Mm-hmm.
So, which can be appropriate for adolescents, but for a 18-month-old, a 2-year-old, it's meaningless to do that. You know, they want to sit on mom's lap. You know, they want to cuddle with her, and they're not allowed to do that. So the challenge for moms, I think, this camp is a wonderful idea. The challenge is trying to stay connected while you are incarcerated. So this mom you just spoke to, she had seen her daughter 3 times in 5 years. That's not a lot. Mm-hmm. How do you stay connected? You stay connected, again, through phone calls, through letters, and your gatekeeper for that is really the child's caretaker. So if you don't have a good relationship with your mom, if you don't have a good, who's watching your children, if you don't have a good relationship with the father of those children, who might be your partner, your husband, or his family, you're not going to have much contact with those kids. And that is to the detriment of those children.
Mm.
Now, a lot of families feel burned out by this. You know, well, you know, you look what you did to yourself. And we don't know that we think your child, you're not a good influence on your child. All of that, I understand why families think that, but it's, to be honest with you, by and large, that's mistaken. Kids really need that contact with their parents, whether you think they're good people or not. It's just critical for their emotional and social development to have that. And jails don't make it easy. One of the difficulties, you think, well, why don't they call? Phone calls from jail are very expensive because jails use a different provider. In fact, Cook County Jail about 5 years ago reported that they made a profit of $750,000 from phone calls for inmates to their homes. And the Vera Institute and the Prison Policy Initiative have both really been working successfully to try to change that practice. So moms can stay connected with their kids. They can stay connected with their child welfare workers, their kids' teachers. How do you stay connected with your kids? Mm. You stay connected with their social network as well.
Let me ask you this. These reuniting programs that you see around the country, and it seems to me they are funded by nonprofits or church groups, corrections departments, they seem to just oblige to their services and their offerings. Should corrections have a bigger role in funding programs that are aimed at rehabilitating the family and helping the mother by these structured reunification in-person programs?
Well, I would say that is, I think many correctional facilities would do that. They're not fully in charge of their budgets either. So that I'm going to suggest that it's the state, it's the counties that really need to step up and say, we're willing to support this financially. A lot of jails and prisons, they're strapped financially as well. They don't have huge budgets. So that's usually the reason they give for not doing this. It's far too expensive to do it, but the human cost is big. And we see this in terms of child mental health and not just child mental health. If moms don't stay connected with their kids, there's some studies that have shown they have a greater likelihood to reoffend once they're out. So it's a broader issue that it looks like, oh, we don't have the money to do that. But really, the investment in this will give long-term gains, both to moms and kids.
Talking about the experiences of mothers who are incarcerated with Professor Emeritus at the Helen Bader School of Social Welfare at UW-Milwaukee, Susan Rose studies it. You can join in your questions, experiences, 800-642-1234. Carol in Oconomowoc. Hi, Carol. Go ahead.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I am wondering if you have studied how many of the mothers have been wrongly accused or wrongly incarcerated. Is there a high percentage like we hear about in other situations?
Carol, thank you. Susan.
That's a good question. We have not studied that. But I would, in terms of most of the mothers end up in jail due to drug-related crimes. So I would say the rate of wrongful conviction of drug-related crimes would relate to those women as well. So they're not in jail due to felonies such as generally robbery, murder, et cetera, but it's drug-related crimes. And for women, you know, you raise a good question. It's likely that they may have been wrongfully convicted because women, by and large, don't have anyone. When they get arrested for a drug crime, oftentimes they're introduced to drugs by a boyfriend, a partner, a group, and they are unwilling to give up the name of the father of their kids in order to get a lighter sentence. So I guess in that sense, you can see it in that way. That's a unique thing with women.
Carol, thank you for that question. The Prison Policy Initiative, you brought it up earlier, and they said that the real challenges are when the mother is released from jail or prison. They found extremely high rates of food insecurity, high rates of homelessness and poverty. What impact does that have on mother and child?
Well, it certainly makes it difficult to reunite with your child. You know, the law in many states are that if you are you can't receive public services if you've been convicted of a drug crime. And as you know, many of these women, that's exactly why they're in jail, is for a drug-related crime. They can't live in public housing, publicly supported housing for that reason. So it just makes it difficult. How do you rebuild your life? One of the things that's really helpful for women is getting a job. How do you get a job if you don't have a home, if you are scratching around for food to eat? It just makes it very, very difficult to meet those goals. So jails right now, House of Correction has been piloting a reentry program to really help women when they reenter. So from the moment that they go into jail, they meet with a reentry specialist who begins to think with them about what are you going to do the first hour that you're released, what are you going to do the second hour, the third hour, the fourth hour? And that's the kind of thinking that we need in jails at this point, not just punishment.
A few seconds left, and I want to look exactly at that. These pilot programs, these initiatives to try to help with the rehabilitation, what is working?
What's working is first addressing the trauma that many women face. And why they're in jail, that's working. So really trauma-informed care, which is Camp Reunite, is really focusing on that. And the second is to really look at hard services. What do you need as soon as you get out? Those kind of reentry programs are very working well.
Susan, thank you for joining us.
thank you for having me and bringing attention to this population who dreadfully needs it, people to care about them.
Susan Rose, Professor Emeritus at the Helen Bader School of Social Welfare at UW-Milwaukee. Her article called Children of Mothers in Jail, published in the journal Women and Criminal Justice. Ahead this hour, we continue our conversation about parental incarceration. News update is next here on the Ideas Network. We're talking about children forced to grow up with an incarcerated parent here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The Urban Institute estimates 2.7 million children in our country are living this reality. Over 5 million have had a parent in prison or jail at some point in their lives. Join in 800-642-1234. Elvin Thomas is an assistant professor in the Department of Human Development and Family Studies at the School of Human Ecology at UW-Madison. His research is on positive youth development and father involvement, especially among Black families. Elvin, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you very much for having me. I really appreciate it.
You recently published your study looking at 84 African-American fathers of young children while the fathers were imprisoned. And you wanted to know how Black fathers experience fatherhood in the context of incarceration. What did you find?
So I think the caveat to the context is that these fathers were experiencing jail stays, not quite prison stays. So the context is slightly
very
different.
Important. Yes.
But in those settings, we recognized from speaking with these fathers, the interviews with the fathers, that even in the depths of those experiences, fathers were still centering their role as fathers, or Black men were still centering their role as fathers. And so out of those interviews, we had three primary identities that fathers seemed to hang on to, and that was father as a nurturer, father as a protector, and father as provider. And that these roles had very important impacts on the family structure, on the parent-child visits, on plans for release, and even the motivation for the assistance once those fathers would re-enter their communities.
Your interviews really, and the outcomes really, fly in the face of this notion that Black men are absent fathers, which is a myth not born out of the data either. Can you tell us, what is the truth about Black fathers and incarceration?
So if we think of Black fathers, I think they're probably the most underrepresented group in the research and in a number of different spaces. And you start kind of delving deeper to find the subgroups of Black fathers or subgroups of marginalized fathers, Black or otherwise. And you start to realize groups like fathers who don't live or who don't share primary residence with their child. That's non-resident fathers, and fathers who are currently incarcerated or have been incarcerated. All of those fathers, the more marginalized their roles become, the less likely society is to assume that they want to be fathers or even appreciate the efforts that they're making towards fatherhood. And so what we've found, just kind of not even from my research, but from the research overall on Black fathers, is that Black fathers remain the most involved group of fathers across different racial and ethnic groups. And that's even across a number of different forms of father involvement or child nurturing activities. Black fathers remain significantly involved, and that involvement increases over time.
When you look at the nurturing and the protecting and the providing, there is the tension that many incarcerated fathers, you found, also want to avoid exposing their child to prisons or jails or over fears of generational patterns. How does that balance play out, wanting to see the child keep that connection, that relationship, but also wanting to protect them from being in that environment?
Yeah, I think that's exactly what you're talking about. It is a tension. It is trying to figure out what best would best serve the child as that child develops, but also what would best serve the family system. So for a shorter jail stay, I think fathers are more likely to be interested in having the children around. If there's a strong co-parenting relationship, a strong relationship with the co-parent and the child prior to the incarceration, fathers are more likely to want their kids to come over. But also, I think we saw for fathers who had that father as provider and protector theme as the underlying theme for their fatherhood identity, we saw that those fathers were less likely to want to see their kids come over to see them in behind bars, and were more likely to just want to be able to send letters if possible or have other forms of contact. And in some cases, no contact at all, essentially saying, I'm willing to sacrifice myself and sacrifice this potential positive impact if I know that there's also the possibility of some kind of negative impact from my child visiting. I could share some stories with regard to some of the work that we've done in the past or I've done in the past with regard to therapy with kids who are having issues and connecting them to their fathers who were incarcerated at the time and the really significant positive improvement that we saw in the children's lives and, of course, for the father to kind of feel that sense of belonging, that sense of purpose in being able to be part of their child's life even while they're incarcerated.
What impact does it have on a child? I'm thinking about the incarcerated father who doesn't want to see the child because of where they are and because perhaps of the shame and the guilt, so many other emotions. What impact does it have on a child for their caregiver to lie about where their father is, not reveal the truth about being incarcerated?
I think the impact of the incarceration has it has these really long legs that are attached to it. It starts from the trauma of the arrest, if the child sees the arrest, the trauma of the immediate and unplanned change to the family system, suddenly not having a parent around, the trauma of not knowing. So dad is no longer around and I don't know where he is and I don't know if he's coming back. Suddenly the world no longer feels as a safe space. Suddenly the world feels very unpredictable. And then there's the shame of knowing when the child finally gets to know. And then there's a shame of moving on. If dad is going to be incarcerated for the next 10 years, what does that mean for me? And how do I figure out who I am and who I am becoming? Knowing that I have a father who's incarcerated, knowing that I have this person who I love, but also knowing that the world and our systems have said that this person is guilty of doing something wrong, whatever that wrong thing might be. So I think there are a number of different layers to that. The not having the father present, and the stories that we tell around what that incarceration is or what it looks like has to be balanced based on that child's developmental trajectory and that child's developmental space. So what kinds of stories do you tell to a 5-year-old versus to a 15-year-old? And how do you change those stories or adapt those stories or kind of give more information as you go along without necessarily setting up that child for failure by telling them the wrong stories or lying to them? I think those are really difficult conversations that moms and other caregivers are trying to navigate. And I think there's space to be able to provide them support about how to have those conversations. And if that space happens within the justice system, that would be great. But also the space with working with fathers to figure out how to reintegrate fathers in the lives of their children, the fathers that want to be part of their lives, the children's lives, how to reintegrate those fathers in those spaces so that the trauma of the punishment does not seep away from the father and into the child or into the family system.
We have UW-Madison Assistant Professor Alvin Thomas, who studies incarceration as we talk about the impacts on parents and their children. He directs the Thomas Resilient Youth Lab at UW-Madison, host of the new Black Fatherhood podcast. You can join in the conversation, 800-642-1234. You talk about the justice system, which is not historically and now has been just for people of color. The incarcerated parent may have an excessive sentence or may be innocent or wait months in jail before a court date because the bail is unaffordable. When you look at those circumstances, how do you address the unfairness, the racism, discrimination of the system when a child involved in that can see that anguish of the adult can see those inequalities firsthand.
I think that's what we mean when we talk about adjusting the conversation to meet the child's developmental stage. So for a 5-year-old child, a 10-year-old, or even a 15-year-old child, the issue is less about why the father is incarcerated and more about that the father is not physically present,
mm-hmm.
That the father cannot be there to tuck me in at night, that the dad is not there to take me to my ball game, to hug me, to take me fishing. That, I think, that is the issue there. I think with regard to the justice system pieces, that's for the adults to handle. As that child gets older, the justice system pieces become more part of that story. But for the younger child, the story still, I think, has to remain on the father's absence and or presence or comparative presence, and figuring out how to help that child navigate that.
Let's look at these reunion camps and what impact they have. Camp Reunite for Fathers starts at the beginning of next month. They organize this one-week camp in partnership with Kettle Moraine Correctional Institution for Men in Sheboygan County. What does your research say about the relationship between visitation and recidivism?
So my research doesn't look at visitation. My research looks more at the relationship between visits during okay. incarceration mm-hmm. And the prior relationship to the child and their caregiver before incarceration. So what we found in that study that you mentioned at the top of this conversation was that the father's plan to live with the child post-incarceration was linked to more contact with the child and more positive relationships with caregivers during incarceration. So if there was a definite plan that the father was deciding to continue to live or to begin to live with that child and the child's parent once they were reunited, then that led to more visits, that led to more positive relationships with the caregivers during incarceration, and also had significant impact on desistance beyond the incarceration. We also saw things like employment, pre-incarceration employment, and social support throughout, and that social support even from the father's own relatives. If that social support was significantly high throughout the incarceration, fathers were less likely to reoffend and more likely to continue a more positive trajectory.
Oh, what I'm hearing that when you look at that future and what it could be, there's hope there. There is something to work toward, and those visitations then have a real ripple effect.
I would agree. I think there's this really strange phenomenon that some of us adopt where if an individual commits a crime, especially a low-level crime, and in some cases, especially infractions, things like missing a child support payment or driving without a license or something, some of the lesser infractions that have only one victim, that's the individual, that our approach is to lock them up and throw away the key and impose these really draconian sanctions, and we want to see people squirm under the thumb of the law and squirm under the thumb of society. I think we have to recognize that people make mistakes, that people make bad decisions, and ultimately our intent, and I think the intent of the justice system, was always to, excuse me, to rehabilitate and to make people whole again and bring them back into society so that they can positively contribute to society as a whole, but also to their families. If we have stronger, more positive families, then we have a stronger society. But I think we need to think about ways to help bring people back in. And I think this idea of the reunions, the camp reunions with families and with parents, that's a really positive, a positive line.
Elvin Thomas directs the Thomas Resilient Youth Lab at UW-Madison, where he's an assistant professor in the School of Human Ecology. Join in on interventions, social justice, sustainable families, resiliency beyond the correction system. 800-642-1234. You're listening to The Morning Show, back in a minute with Elvin Thomas here on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Let's pick up our conversation on the toll incarceration has on children and families. Data published in the journal Science last year, family member incarceration is even more pervasive for African-American families, impacting far more than 60% of adults under the age of 50. Join in on consequences, personal experiences, where you see solutions. 800-642-1234. Elvin Thomas is a clinical psychologist and assistant professor in the Department of Human Development and Family Studies at UW-Madison, with us for about 7 more minutes. Elvin, when you looked at paternal incarceration, you also looked at chronic stress among children in low-income families. What can be done to mitigate the negative effects of fathers being incarcerated?
I think I said at the top of the interview that the impact is, or the impact starts even with the arrest. Witnessing the arrest often is traumatic for families in general, but for kids in particular. And then carrying through that entire experience, you have a continuation of traumatic experiences and chronic stress that continues throughout and builds up. And so what we found was that something as unseen, something as under the skin, the telomere length, and that's a biomarker of chronic stress, essentially telling you how long an individual is likely to live because of the replication of the cells, that experience of witnessing a parent arrested and the full experience of the incarceration process has significant adverse effects on the physical health. We didn't even look at the mental health, just the physical health of children, and that we saw that significant impact from age 9 to age 15. So children who had parents who were arrested and incarcerated at 9 years old, what did that look like for them at 15 years old? And we saw significantly shorter telomere length. So essentially what it was telling us was that the chronic stress of having witnessed or been experienced the incarceration of the paternal parent had significant undermining effects on the physical health and longevity and mortality for 9 to 15-year-old children.
When you talked with children, what were some surprising moments of these documented conversations? What took you aback?
So for this study, we used a very large national longitudinal cohort study. So we didn't speak to the children. Mm-hmm. We collected data from them through surveys and other forms. But in my therapy experiences, I don't do therapy anymore, but in my past therapy experiences, when I connected with kids, I think the very first time I spoke with a child who had a parent incarcerated, it surprised me that, for that child, it wasn't an incarcerated parent. It was my dad. And for every child I've spoken to who has an incarcerated parent, it wasn't my mom who's incarcerated or my dad who's in jail. It was just my mom. It was just my dad. And so recognizing that at the end of the day for these kids, these are still people. That my dad is still my dad. He did a bad thing. He's where he is. My mom did a bad thing. She's still where she is. But that is still my dad. And I think if we recognize the humanity of that connection, we realize that it's not that we can't go the way of just crushing and deleting these individuals. That we, because of those real life connections, those experiential connections, those psychic connections between individuals and children, that we have to do whatever we can to rehabilitate, to reinstate, and to strengthen those family connections.
UW Madison Assistant Professor Alvin Thomas with us. Join in your questions on parental incarceration, fatherhood, building relationships between child and parent, 800-642-1234. Alvin, you mentioned therapy. Fathers less likely, you have found, to seek or be asked to participate in therapy. What is the role of therapy for fathers who've been incarcerated and their children?
I think for fathers, it is reconnecting them to the larger purpose. And you mentioned the podcast that we recently released on Father's Day on Juneteenth this year. One of the first conversations that we had was the meaning of fatherhood. What does it mean to be a father? And across the guys who were speaking, these black fathers who were speaking about what it meant to be a black father for them, all of them were saying that it is this larger, almost spiritual responsibility to usher in and to almost guide another human being through their first few paths of life. I think if we can reconnect fathers to that responsibility, to that that role, that larger purpose, a purpose beyond themselves, then we see significantly better outcomes, both for the fathers, for the children, and also for the moms who are involved and for the family system overall. For the children, it's a way to help them make sense of this traumatic incident, a way to readjust and rethink that damaged worldview of the world as unpredictable, and to allow them to make a more positive path going forward from that, from those experiences.
In our last few moments together, then what rehabilitation can you point to that makes the greatest impact on children, that has the most positive impact?
So I don't study the specific programs, but any program that's going to allow for fathers to explore themselves while they're incarcerated, not just a few months before they're released, but throughout the entire time that they're incarcerated, providing support systems for them to explore their mental health and to deal with some of the trauma that they themselves experienced as children and as young adults, and also providing support systems for the families that are left behind to deal with the trauma of that incarceration, especially for the children who are left behind to deal with the trauma of that incarceration. So that when you finally bring those two pieces together, you're not bringing in a broken piece and a piece that's partly damaged, but you're bringing in two pieces that have both been supported in developing and strengthening themselves.
Alvin, thank you for joining us.
You're welcome. Thank you very much.
Alvin Thomas, assistant professor in the Department of Human Development and Family Studies at UW-Madison. Earlier, we spoke with Susan Rose, professor emeritus at UW-Milwaukee, who studies the experiences of women in jail and prisons. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network.